1, 2, 3. Hey, what's going on, everyone? It's Cole Cruz, and you're listening to the KC at the Movies podcast for the 8th of September 2020. It's part two of the quarantine podcast, the long podcast we have planned for you. Part one is already out there. I hope you had a listen to it already. Got some movie recommendations in. Just felt, just got some better movies to watch, you know? So yes, welcome to part two of the quarantine podcast. We'll be talking about TV shows. There's only a couple here. And movie franchises and comedy specials as well. So there's not many TV shows because I want to talk about one in length in particular, which would be the first one I'm talking about anyway. And how it's going to work is when I go for the movie franchises as well, I'm just going to talk about the franchise in general. I'm not going to talk about each movie individually. I'm just going to talk about the franchise itself, and I'll just talk about like all the movies, and I might have a ranking system in place. So expect something like that. All right, so why don't we start off by talking about the TV shows? Now, the first one I got here is something I checked out a while ago. I think it came out in July, I'm pretty sure, June or July. But that is Defending Jacob. It's on Apple TV Plus, and if you can, if you have Apple TV Plus, it's like $8 a month. If you don't have it, yeah, it's an Apple TV Plus original. It's an Apple TV Plus original. There's about 8 episodes, each an hour long, and it is about a young boy that gets accused of murdering a young girl in the neighborhood, and the downfall and the aftermath that comes after that, even though we don't know if he didn't do it or if he did do it. And it's about like all the grief that the parents go through, and they pretty much are cast as social pariahs, and you see their day-to-day lives as they're dealing with the fallout of what Jacob's done during the what he might have done. And that's up to you to watch and discover. Did I like it? Yes, very much so. I think it's one of my favorite TV shows of the year. Chris Evans is really, really good in it. He's not just Captain America, ladies and gentlemen. He has done other stuff. He's in other things. And he is really, really good here. And along with the standout Michelle Dockery as the parents of Jacob. And Jacob himself is actually played by Jaden Martell, who is everyone knows as that strange kid from It with the comb over. And he looks pretty creepy. He's also in the Lodge, which I talked about in the last part of the quarantine podcast as well. He is the titular character, Jacob. And because sometimes you're looking at him and you're thinking like, maybe you did do it, you know? But as I said, Michelle Dockery and Chris Evans are fantastic in this show. The acting is top-notch. The cinematography is beautiful. The score is great. And it's just a really, really unique look. I don't think we have a show that really explores the aftermath like this. And what exactly, especially when you're living in a small town, what exactly happens when someone that you know or your relative that is just accused of this extremely heinous crime. And it was also, it was just very sad to see the family go through this. And they can't even shop at their like grocery store. She has to go at like early hours in the morning because that's like when no one's there. And even when she does go there, she does run into a few friends and she's got to deal with that. Chris Evans, I haven't even mentioned, is the district attorney, and you can see what's going on there. You can see the tension and the conflict that's going to come with that as well. And I mostly enjoyed the show. I think the first two, 1 to 6 was good. I don't think we needed a 7 and an 8 episode. I think the first 6 episodes are very, very solid, and then we start kind of falling off at the 7 and 8 mark, because now this is, I don't want to get into minor spoilers, or any spoilers for that matter, but this is going to be a minor spoiler, It's not going to be, it's not anything, that's going to affect your viewing or anything. But if you don't want any spoilers, I suggest skipping ahead. If you don't want any information spoiled for you at all. But again, this is just, it's very mild. It's just, it's nothing at all, really. So I liked the first six episodes. I thought they were very, very solid. And I liked the mystery that went along with that. And I just loved watching all the drama happen. And there's something that happens. I'm mixed on the ending because there's something that happens at the end. They go to Mexico and something happens in Mexico. And then that kind of changes the whole ending again of the show. And then we're left with a final episode. And then another thing happens on top of that, which is kind of just like, we've already gone through so much already. There's no need to just, you know, pile this shit on. And something else happens at the end. And I wasn't a fan of it. I thought it was a bit too much. I just thought it was like that, I don't know, that kind of, you don't want to say, because yeah, I'm trying to skate around not spoiling it. Yeah. I just thought it was too much. I just thought it was a little too much. I thought we got the end, like I was happy with that ending, and then there's like an extra thing that the writers have just packed on, and I just didn't think we needed that. I didn't think the show needed that, so that kind of brought the show's final rating at the end just down a bit because of that, what they've done with that. As you all know, who, if you've listened to the podcast before and heard me talk about endings, especially with media, film and TV, I get very turned off if it's like the ending is not stuck. And that's just a me thing. It's not a thing that has to be, you know, has to be enforced, but that's just a thing that happens with me. If the ending is not, doesn't really sit well with me, it kind of just leaves this aftertaste in my mouth that's quite sour, and I'm not a fan of it. But other than that ending, I thought the show was very, very solid. I think it's a really, really well-acted show. Chris Evans, again, and Michelle Dockery are great. Jaden Martell is great. And the surrounding characters are also really good. I would recommend this if you have seen The Hunt, not the movie that came out this year with Betty Gilpin and one that was like pushed back for Universal, and there was a whole fuck around with that one. Not The Hunt, that one. It is The Hunt, the Danish film, The Hunt, with Mads Mikkelsen. If you want a similar vibe, this is the show to watch. If you love The Hunt and you want to watch something similar to that, I think The Hunt does it just as good, if not better, than this show. But they both show situations where our main characters are just thrust into this situation that they have no control over, and they're just hated on, they're just shat on the whole time by the people surrounding them. And it doesn't help, obviously, when there's a small town, because things get said about you, and then you can't really defend yourself because everyone's just like, well, there's nowhere else to blame, you know? So I reckon if you like The Hunt, you'll definitely love this show, Defending Jacob. If you have Apple TV Plus, give it a go. If you don't have Apple TV Plus, still find it somewhere, I guess. Yeah, I thought with this show, I think it's a good start for Apple TV Plus, because at the first I was like, well, like, what is, because I bought Apple TV Plus for this show specifically, and then I've kept it ever since because I'm actually releasing pretty good stuff. I want to mention one show I'm watching at the moment, Ted Lasso, which is also on Apple TV Plus. Ted Lasso is also really, really good. If you want like just really positive vibes, I think Ted Lasso is a very good show. And it doesn't have, well, it's got some drama here and there, but it's just really, really heartwarming. And I think we need a show like that right now. And Apple TV Plus has that. As well as that, they've got a fantastic documentary out. I've heard from a friend. It's one of their favorite movies / things of the year. Boys State, which is also an A24 thing. and as you guys know, I love A24. So I'll be checking it out this week along with new episodes of Ted Lasso as well. But that enough about Apple TV Plus. Defending Jacob, really, really good show. Do check it out when you get the time. All right, let's move on to the comedy specials before I get to the movies. I watched 4 comedy specials so far. I'm like continuing to watch them now, but the ones that I've documented and have my thoughts about, I've got them right here. So I started off by watching Hannah Gadsby's new stand-up special, Douglas. And you guys will probably know that Hannah Gadsby released a special a couple of years ago called Nanette, which was incredible. It was highly unconventional. It was a special, but it wasn't your typical comedy stand-up special. There was a message behind it, and there was a stance was taken. And Hannah Gadsby had a very, very powerful voice during that special, and it remains one of my favorite specials of all time because just how I felt afterwards and how much you feel for Hannah. And it's just such a, it's a powerful hour of stand-up. And I highly recommend it if you haven't seen that. It's also on Netflix, Nanette. But she kind of changed things around for Douglas. This is more of your more conventional stand-up special. However, there's some good message behind it as well. She also has another message she has put in there behind it as well. And again, it's just another great special. Like, there's not much to say. Hannah Gadsby has hit again, and it's very funny. And she does this thing where she, at the start of the special, tells you what to expect before the special begins, and she lays out, she does like an outline of the whole special, and she tells you everything pretty much in the outline and what you're going to expect during the special. And she was like, well, you're going to do this, I'm going to say this, and then you're going to do this, and I'm going to say this, and you're going to do this. And you're kind of thinking, well, now that you've told us what now that you've told us what to expect, you know, like, it's kind of ruins the surprise of it all. But then you watch the special, and like clockwork, it happens on her design, and you still love it. You still laugh. You laugh very, very much. There's a joke that she has saved at the end, which she says, you're going to laugh at that really hard. And I'm like, all right. And then I did. So she achieved what she set out to do, and she done it by spades. So I highly recommend Hannah Gadsby's follow-up to Nanette. And I really can't wait to what she does next. She's really one of the best working comedians, I think, today. And she continues to surprise. Next up, I watched Eric Andre's Legalize Everything. Eric Andre, you guys know, is a he's a crazy dude, as people would say. He's that crazy bloke on the telly. And he is that crazy bloke on the telly. So Eric Andre, he's like this, he's a stand-up comedian. He runs a show of his called The Eric Andre Show with Hannibal Buress, who you guys might know from his stand-up specials. He was also on Broad City. And they have a talk show, which is like a parody of a talk show. And it's just fucking, it's insane. And I enjoy him on that talk show. And I enjoy him in interviews. I enjoy him on Hot, he's been on Hot Ones twice. And I enjoy him on Hot Ones. And I do enjoy Eric as a person. I actually did watch the movie that he released this year with a little role called Bad Trip. That was kind of like your Jackass, but also a bit of a narrative was woven into that. It was fine. And look, this special is also fine. I don't think I enjoy him as much as a comedian when it comes to stand-up, because it's kind of just the same shtick. He just kind of does crazy stuff and yells, and it's not really much of a structure to his routine. And if you've come looking for a very, very smart comedy, you're not going to find it in here. Sorry. But if you like Andre, you're a fan of his, as I am, I think it's fine, something to enjoy here. Just don't expect anything like fantastic. It's just, I didn't waste my time with it. I had fun, but I don't really see myself revisiting this special. Next up, I revisited Taylor Tomlinson's special, Quarter Life Crisis, which I watched back in March. And I decided to watch it again because I just was surfing through Netflix and I was like in the mood again for her, because I really enjoyed that special back in March. And yeah, I still really enjoyed it. It's a great special, very relatable content, very sharp, witty jokes. Her delivery is really good. Love her stage presence. She owns it. Taylor Tomlinson fucking owns it, dude. She's one of the ones to watch, I think. And I really can't wait to see what she releases next as well. And then finally, I watched Jim Jefferies' new special, Intolerant. And Jim Jefferies has kind of had a mixed track record with me because I really, really enjoy his earlier stuff, like Contraband, Fully Functional, Alcohol Holocaust, and you know, those earlier specials. And I do like Bear from 2013. And when it hit Freedom and then was like, this is me now, this is where he started dropping for me. And I was like, oh, okay, he's kind of taking more of a political angle, and it's not a great political angle in my opinion. And some of the jokes is not as funny as what they used to be. And I was kind of just not really liking his new stuff, except Bear. I think Bear is a standout. But this, he's back. I'm happy to say he's back in true form, just like CK was back in true form back in April. With Sincerely, I think Jim Jefferies is back in true form as well, because not only are the jokes really, really funny and have like really, really laugh out loud moments, and Jim has great stories as well. He has a great story to end the show as well. This comedy special has one of my favorite things with comedy specials. It's like a narrative that encases the whole special. I love when you watch a special and you find out why exactly that comedian called that special that name. And at the end of Intolerant, you find out that why Jim has called it Intolerant. And I'm not going to spoil what it is, what the joke is, what the narrative is, but you find out why Jim has called it Intolerant, and it just lands, man. It just lands and it hits and it's great. And well, I sound like a broken record at the moment. I can't wait to see what he does next. But yeah, truly, I can't wait to see what he does next. All right, moving on to the movies. I didn't want to spend... You're probably sitting there thinking, like, oh, Jesus, man, you're zipping here. There is another part to be recorded, so that's why I'm going through a lot... Like going so fast at the moment, because there's another part to record, and I've been kind of slack. I'll be honest, I've been slack with it, and I want to get these parts out so we can have this quarantine thing out of the way, because I have much more things to release, and we've got some things in the oven. We've got some things in the oven here. So let's talk about some movie franchises that I've revisited, watched for the first time, all of it really. So the first thing that I did was I watched all the Harry Potter films again, because I was part of a isolation book club where myself would read all the Harry Potter books. I did not read the Harry Potter books. I just watched the movies. But we're doing a Hunger Games one at the moment, which is kind of the same thing. But this time I'm actually reading the books, because there's only three of them. And not that it was an excuse that I didn't want to read all fucking seven books, but yeah, maybe. Maybe that was the excuse. I also was doing other things at the moment. I was going through a rough time. So I watched the Harry Potter films. We watched them over a course of, oh man, how many weeks? A lot of weeks. And we will watch every couple of weeks. So we read the book, and then every 2 weeks we will watch the film, and then it would be 2 weeks, and then the next film, and then, yeah, you get it. And we watched all of them. And, yep, I still enjoy them a lot. Enjoy them very much. And specifically, Prisoner of Azkaban. It is still my favorite. Love, 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 love it. Love that movie. Half-Blood Prince is still my second favorite, I believe, when I talked about this, not last year, year before, I think. Prisoner of Azkaban was the first one, my favorite one. Then it was Half-Blood Prince, and it still remains that way. However, my third is Order of the Phoenix, and that used to be Chamber, I believe. I think it was Chamber. But my third has been Order of the Phoenix, because it's not because it's short. It is well paced, though. I just forgot how exciting that movie was. The score is really good too. Love the score in Order of the Phoenix, and there's just a lot of cool stuff that happens. Except obviously the death of spoiler alert, Sirius Black. That's not a fun moment, isn't it? But I just really, really enjoyed Order of the Phoenix. Good stuff. And Chamber of Secrets, I think, came in fourth because I still like the whole mystery angle of that. Even though that is, I forgot that movie is 2 hours and 46 minutes long. And it really doesn't feel like it once you start getting into the second, third act. Because it just kind of just goes from there. And then you got the Basilisk fight. You got the Tom Riddle with the diary. And you can really tell that I'm a huge Potter nut. I'm just trying to hide it. Yeah, no, I don't know too much about the whole lore and universe or everything. I just enjoy the films. Love the films. And the actors. And it's just really cool seeing three best friends really grow up through movies, and you see them go from fucking little kids to what, like 18 year olds. I'm not too sure how old they were in the Beverly Hills Part 2, but yeah, just watch them grow up for a series of films, and it's crazy. It's like watching, it's like the Magic Before trilogy. Fucking mosquito. But if you want to know my rank, here it is. Prisoner of Azkaban is number one. Half-Blood Prince is number two. Order of the Phoenix is number three. Chamber of Secrets, number four. Five is Deathly Hallows Part 2. Six is Philosopher's Stone. Seven is Deathly Hallows Part 1. And eight is Goblet of Fire. Goblet of Fire really is just like, I don't know. I just didn't like. It gets kind of boring at times, really. I like the Triwizard Tournament, and I like the. You know, the whole Dumbledore thing. Michael Gambon. Okay. Okay, so. Jesus. Yeah, I don't know. I just didn't really go much on that. And Deathly Hallows Part 1 is just set up for Part 2, so it's not much exciting. I think the Horcruxes, like, finding them is interesting, but other than that, there's not much there for you. And that's my ranking of the Harry Potter films. If you have anything to say about that, don't. Okay, moving on. I started doing a Wes Anderson marathon as well during this time, and didn't get very far. And that wasn't on purpose. I decided to just to have give a break and give myself a break and revisit the films, some more of his movies in the future. But I did check out four of his movies, and I will talk about them right now. The Royal Tenenbaums was the first one I watched. Yeah, you can really tell that Wes Anderson is starting to find his style here. I mean, I haven't seen Bottle Rocket and like Rushmore and everything like that before, so that'll be the next movies that I'll watch. But you really feel his style coming in, and you got the colors, the production design. But what's missing from, I think, the movies after Tenenbaums is like this almost really cynical dark comedy. It's like, it's really dark at points, and I think he's kind of just gone full. I mean, we'll talk about Grand Budapest in a minute, but this is before he kind of really finds his style, and he's playing with different genres, and I think it does it well. I think it's very, very funny. It's dark at times. There's some great performances. Like, Gwyneth Paltrow's great. I think Luke Wilson's great. Ben Stiller's great. And Gene Hackman is great as well. Even though I heard that he gave Wes a hard time on set, and, like, Bill Murray had to, like, come in, and, yeah, I don't know what happened there, but, like, apparently Bill Murray had to, like, come in and be like, Gene, you've been a kind of a dick, mate. Like, stop what you're doing. So, but other than that, like, he's really good in the movie, and the ending is odd, but I enjoyed it, really, really liked it. And then we moved on to Moonrise Kingdom, and I loved Moonrise Kingdom. I fucking loved Moonrise Kingdom. What I noticed, though, during Moonrise Kingdom was he sets up shots to look bad on purpose, because there's one in particular between our two main characters, Sam and Susie, where they're sitting on, I think they've just gone swimming, and they're sitting on a rock, and it cuts to I want to say a close up. It tries to be it's a close up because it's a shot reverse shot of close ups of their faces, and it's like there's one where Susie has a close up, and it's really off center. And I was like, is that? I wonder if that's on purpose, because the rest of the scenes is pretty well established within its context. I just think that there's like a couple of shots. There's one shot. There's that shot. There's like two more. There's like three shots in that one scene where it's like, is he going off center? Did the camera move, or is he doing that on purpose? I'm not too sure. But I love this one. I love Sam and Susie. Really, really enjoyed this. Love the score. Alexander Desplat. Yum. Love it. Well done, sir. And side characters are great too. Bruce Willis, Frances McDormand. You have Edward Norton as well, and everyone's great. What? There's not much to say because the movie's good. I really, really like this one. I think this is my second favorite, and we'll get to the rankings again out of these four in a minute. But yeah, check out Moonrise Kingdom. It's really, really heartwarming, really sweet. You'll love the main characters, Sam and Susie. And you'll fucking love Alexander Desplat's just fairy tale like score. It's just phenomenal. It's great stuff. And moving on to what everyone considers to be Mr. Anderson's magnum opus, because he goes full Wes in this one, I believe. everyone says he goes full Wes. I'm talking about the Grand Budapest Hotel, ladies and gentlemen. It's amazing. It's maze. It's it. Yep. I love this. So much so, I just loved the character of Gustav by Ralph Fiennes. And Zero, I mean, Tony Revolori's Zero is really good too. But I just love the whole story. I love the aspect ratio changes. I love Saoirse Ronan as the, I forget her name, but she makes the sweets for Zero. The whole movie is just so good. And the music's great. And it's just Wes shooting, firing, bang, bang, bang on all cylinders. And he's just fucking hitting. He's hitting. And it's amazing. It is just gorgeous. Gorgeous stuff. It's very, very funny as well at times. I particularly love the part where Willem Dafoe, I forget his character's name, but he just like kicks a cat out the window. And I think it's Jeff Goldblum who plays like the judge. He's I think he just says it's a dog. I think it's a dog or a cat, I don't know, but he's like, did you just kick that cat out dog out the window? it's really good stuff. It's like got the shades of the Tenenbaums comedy, but this is where it's just his full power. And until the French Dispatch trailer, which I watched, a while ago, which who the fuck knows when that's coming out now, this was Wes Anderson at his highest peak, at his just full Wes mode. And, symmetrical shots, you got music, you got color, you got everything. It's an explosion. And it's the best explosion that you could ask for from this man. Big recommendation for me for Grand Budapest. I can see why this was nominated for Oscars, because, I mean, like, if I'm going to be honest, a few years ago when it did come out and I was, when I was watching that ceremony, I was just like, oh, what's this fucking Grand Budapest Hotel? Like, but now, like, obviously being older and going to film school and having more appreciation for film and how it's all made and everything, you can't help but love the man. Like, he is just a... He's one of the masters, and he has his own style, so much so that if you see something that resembles his style, you just say, "Well, that looks like that looks like a Wes Anderson film." He has joined the ranks of those people where you will look at that and you're like, "Well, that looks like that, like this person's craft." And I just read about him making Rushmore in this book that is really, really good. About the movies in 1999, and hearing where he started and where he is now, like you can't upload applaud for the man. He's He's done so well for himself, and he's made so many really good movies. And Grand Budapest is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's just, I just loved it. I want to go watch it again. I went and bought it on Blu-ray like a few weeks ago, and I want to watch it again because I fucking loved it. And finally, this kind of comes close to Grand Budapest, but everyone, I mean, it depends on who you are, but this one comes very close when it comes to considering what films are Wes's best, and this one is no exception to the rule of that, and it's Fantastic Mr. Fox. This was obviously adapted from the story of Fantastic Mr. Fox, but it's all done in stop motion. You have the voice acting talents of George Clooney, Jason Schwartzman, Meryl Streep, Bill Murray, Willem Dafoe, Owen Wilson. Great, great, great cast. And it's one of my favorite subgenres of film, heist. Heist movie. It's a fucking heist movie. And it's great. It doesn't stop. It's rolling. It's fucking amazing. Good stuff. It's really hard to take me seriously as a very serious critic. But this movie's fucking bonkers. It's crazy. I love it. It's so good. And it just doesn't let you... It's just so fun. And there's something happening in every single shot of this movie. It keeps moving. And it's incredible. Good stuff. I highly, 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 highly recommend you watch both this and Grand Budapest. Are probably what I'm recommending here from Wes's filmography, because especially for young children, even for young children, even it does have like some adult scenes in it. This is a fun time. This is a really, really fun time for children, like I said, and adults. It does have some adult content and themes in there and things that adults can enjoy. It's a fucking great movie for everyone. Like, it's so good. So yeah, watch Fantastic Mr. Fox, please. Alright, I need to calm down. In terms of order or rank, I don't want to rank these because they're all great. I'd say Grand Budapest, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Moonrise Kingdom, Royal Tenenbaums. So, but I haven't seen like Darjeeling Limited. I haven't seen Bottle Rocket. I haven't seen Rushmore, and I think that's the only four I have to see. And obviously The French Dispatch, which was supposed to come out in June, I believe, and then now it's been pushed back to fucking who knows, indefinitely, as the headlines say. So then after that, I checked out the Oceans franchise. I won't really spend much time here, but loved them. Didn't love 12, though. Thought 12 did kind of bore me a little bit. But 11 is great. I love the characters. I love Brad Pitt's character, especially. I just love how he has something to eat all the time. That's like, that's me. That's probably me when I'm on heists. Even, I heist sometimes. It's not a big deal. I've stolen some things. I've eaten a sandwich while I've done it. It's so relatable, you know. I'm watching it, I'm thinking, that's me. But all jokes aside, really, really fun movie. And the whole, again, like the characters coming together, the whole heist and how everything works out. Andy Garcia's villain. Yum. Love it. I'm not making any more fucking sense anymore. Moving on to 12, I thought it was a little bit more... didn't like it as much. I thought it went a little too far with the whole Julia Roberts playing herself. And I thought that was a little ridiculous. I don't know, the whole plan of 12 kind of didn't really work for me. I didn't really like it that much. But I'm happy to say it did pick up in 13, and I enjoyed the ending. And too bad I didn't like 8 that much, but they should have ended it there anyway, really. Like, it has its moments, but I don't know. I'd rather watch Widows, really. Because Widow does what that movie does, but better. But I'm talking about the, you know, the original films. Good stuff. Love 11, love 13, and 12 is kind of meh. But 11. If I had to recommend one really fun movie, I'd probably say check out Ocean's 11. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's very, very enjoyable, very much worth your time. And you might fall in love with Brad Pitt, like I did. It might happen. And, oh, this is the second last one. Okay, good. We're reaching a 40-minute mark here. The next I checked out, this is thanks to a my housemate. We had Lord of the Rings Marathon, and get this, not the standard edition, the extended editions. And we watched all three of them in one day. So we started at 9:30, I think, and ended at midnight, pretty much. It was insane. A movie, like, watched a movie which is, like, 3.5 hours long. Most of them, I mean, fucking Return of the King is, like, 4 hours long. And they're great. Like, they're so good. I haven't seen them since I was a kid, and I was happy to watch them. And, yeah, I'm just happy to report that, like, they're great. You don't have to do what we did and watch them all in one day, but if I'm honest, it kind of worked. I was happy. It kind of worked. And it was you can pat yourself on the back if you get it done. You can really pat yourself on the back and really feel accomplished watching all of those movies in one fucking day. And they're great. You love all the characters, especially the friendship between Gimli and Legolas. The characters, just, yeah, Aragorn, Frodo, Gandalf, just everyone, the whole party. You really, really fall in love with these characters, and you love the journey they take, and the ending is just, it's perfect. And then you get to the Hobbit films, and you're kind of like, all right, okay. Desolation of Smaug, though, is actually, I really enjoyed that one. But this is the OJ trilogy, this is what you come to see, and it does not disappoint. It's just very long. They're very, very long. But I've heard the theatrical versions of, I'll tell you what I would actually prefer, the theatrical version of Two Towers over the extended edition, because the extended edition to me had a little too much ants and tree beard. And you're cutting that with the Battle of Helm's Deep, and it kind of takes away from that pacing of the Battle of Helm's Deep and the tension there. I kind of think it cuts the tension when you're cutting back to Treebeard and, like, his little quest with, like, Merry and Pippin, and it's just not as exciting as the fucking Battle of Helm's Deep. Of Helm's Deep, sorry. And I think if I were to watch the Two Towers again, I'd probably choose the actual version. However, the other two, I'd probably just watch the extended edition again, because Fellowship of the Ring, yep, is just amazing, incredible. What's more to be said? There's nothing more to be said. You know what it is. And Return of the King is probably my favorite. It's 4 hours long, but I just loved the whole resolution, everything. It's all wrapped up beautifully. Aragorn's story, Frodo's story. God damn, the goodbye between Frodo and Sam. Broken heart. Anyway, fact of the matter is, these movies are dope. And you should really give them a go. You don't have to do, like I said, you don't have to do the whole watch them all in one day, but I'm gonna be honest, didn't hurt. We felt exhausted afterwards, like, it really takes it out of you. But if you want to do it, okay, if you really want to do it, I recommend starting at, like, an earlier time, and then you'll finish by midnight. Have a lot of snacks on standby. Have some coffee. Have some tea. Have some snacks. I've said snacks. Yes. Have some just any caffeinated beverages with you as well, and good sustenance. And have a lunch. Have a lunch break. Have 15 minutes breaks between each movie. But that's all you're going to have. I'm sorry. but that's all you're going to have is 15 minutes because you got to jump back into the next one. So you got to, you know, play it safe. Otherwise, you're going to be there till like fucking 2 a.m. and you do not want that. So 15 minutes break between each film and then jump back in straight away. And then obviously have your breaks, go to the toilet, you know, do all that stuff. And you'll get it done. You will get it done. So if you really want to embark on that journey, be my guest. It was fun. Look, it wasn't that bad. Oh, my poster has just fallen off. So that's fun. Cool. All right. And finally, I checked out the Indiana Jones films because I have never seen them. Full disclosure, I have never seen the Indiana Jones movies up until now. And I ended up watching them all in one day as well. But obviously they're much shorter and since they move so quickly, you kind of just like, oh, well, I can just get going. Fuck it. I mean, that's why I watched Camp of the Crystal Skull, even though I highly regret that. But still got it done. I just, yeah, what's more to be said? Raiders of the Lost Ark is iconic for a reason. It's one of the best action movies ever put to screen. Spielberg's vision is just immaculate. Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones is, again, just breaking record. But here we go, iconic. And the action is some of the best action ever. Like, it's so fucking good. The score by John Williams. Iconic. And I want to highlight here, I think is an MVP, especially of the first three movies, is Douglas Slocum, the director of cinematography. Director of photography. Or as we in the biz call him, the DP. He is phenomenal. He's a shining star. And he doesn't get talked about that much. His use of light and shadow and some of the shots, especially some of the shots in Raiders. I mean, fuck. So, it's gorgeous. It's fucking gorgeous. So, yes, hats off to you, Mr. Slocum. Like, very, very, very good stuff. I mean, obviously it was helped by him and Spielberg obviously collaborated well with each other to get that vision across, and it, again, it shows. But the lighting as well, I just want to talk about the lighting for a second, especially in Raiders, and Crusade has the great fire sequence as well in the house with Sean Connery, but we'll get to Crusade in a minute. But the scene where Indy has the map, even the opening sequence, again, what a great way to establish your character, by the way. What a great way, an exciting way to establish your main character by having an opening sequence like that. And everything you thought of when you think of the Indiana Jones films, it's all happening in the opening scene. So straight away you're like, okay, well, shit. So there's not really much more to say. The Raiders of the Lost Ark, great fucking action. Really miss action being filmed like this nowadays. I know we have like the John Wick movies and, you know, whatever Chad Stahelski and David Leitch work on. We know obviously their stunt work is going to be amazing. But just exciting, nail-biting, gripping action like this, I miss. And if you want to check out some of the best action, just go back to Raiders and check it out, because it's so good. It's so good. The truck chase. That's it. That's all you need to know. Bye night. Good. I just said bye night. Good night. That's all you need to know. Then we're moving on to Temple of Doom. I think Temple of Doom's first act is very, very, very slow. I think Willy is such an annoying fucking side character. Oh my God. Compared to Marion from Raiders of the Lost Ark, where you get Willie and you're like, who are you? And she's just complaining about literally fucking everything. And that is really what brings Temple of Doom down for me. But then it picks up in the second act, and I really love the action throughout. I love the minor car chase. I loved ripped Harrison Ford on the bridge. And the, again, talking about Douglas Local cinematography, the scene in the temple with the cult and everything and all the red and the use of that. And the score. The chanting score. Yep. I'm dead. Good. It really makes up for that really slow, weirdly paced first act. And then Willie's like, she's there, but you know, who fucking cares? Willie. You get the action in the end, and you get the excitement, and that's what you really come for here, isn't it? You come to see shirtless Harrison Ford, and look, you get it, all right? You get it, and it's good. So, and then we move on to Last Crusade, which is my second, because I did rank these as ones as well, and we'll get to the ranking in a minute. Last Crusade is also really, really good. I think this movie has, Raiders has the action, and I think Crusade has the character development, because you have Indy and his father, who's played excellently by Sean Connery. That is really well explored in Last Crusade, and it's also really, really funny. Crusade's like the funniest one, in my opinion. And, again, it's just a really, really exciting adventure. It has a great first act, second act, third act. It's almost perfect. It's almost like Raiders. But I just think Raiders, in my opinion, is just a touch better than Crusade. But who knows? If I could watch Crusade, like if when I get to see these movies again, Crusade might climb to the top, considering how I love some character development. Oh, yes, I do. And it could climb back to the top. It could climb to the top. But we'll see, obviously, in due time. So it's just exciting. Crusade's third act is better than Raiders, because Raiders' third act just has Indy and Marion tied to the pole, and you got like the fucking Ark of the Covenant and everything, and all the things flying around. But Indy actually gets to do something in the third act of Crusade. So this actually could bring it over Raiders. Because he has to do the riddle and the puzzle of the Holy Grail and the old knight. And it also has to do with saving his father. So there's a lot of stakes, I think, at the end of the third act as well. But also, it also makes Indy, it gives him something to do in the third act. And I think that makes it more exciting. It's third act more exciting than Raiders of the Lost Ark. So, oh man, maybe they're just both at the top. Fuck it. They're both one. But yeah, we'll get to the ranking in a minute. But we've got to finish off, because I had to do it. And I want to just tell you a little story before I start here. So I finished Crusade, and then it was like, I think it was like 11 p.m., and my friend was like, are you watching Kingdom as well? And I was like, well, you know, it's canon. Like, it's there. It's canon. So, yeah. I have to. I remember watching it and thinking, oh, didn't like that. And, but I was like, oh, probably it's like, now that I'm like, you know, I pay attention more to film now and everything. And, you know, have this new mindset for everything. Oh, more of an open mind. I might enjoy it. Nope. No. No. This movie is bad. This movie is a joke of the franchise. An absolute fucking joke of this whole franchise. I don't know what they were thinking with Kingdom. I don't know what they were thinking. But it's bad action. There's bad dialogue. There is one good action scene, and it's the motorcycle chase in the city where Indy like goes through the library and chases Mutt. By the way, Mutt, fuck you, bad name. And even married in this movie is just boring. She just drives a car. That's it. Cate Blanchett's Russian accent's laughable. The aliens suck dick. I hated this one. I really did hate Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It was just an abomination of this whole franchise. And I think it is, it's such a sour note to lead this franchise on. Unless we do get Indy 5 in a few years, this one is just, this should have ended at Crusade. I'll just say that. Should have ended at Crusade. I'll just say that. Now I'm sad. but I'll get to my rankings right now. So I think we talk about like Raiders and Crusade being one, but I think I'm gonna slot Raiders. I'll watch the movies again sometime soon, but right now I'm slotting Raiders at one, and I'll put Crusade at two, Temple of Doom at three, and of course Kingdom of the Crystal Skull at four. And it almost kind of goes in chronological, almost. You switch Crusade and Temple. But yeah, that's my ranking for Indiana Jones. And that brings us to the end of the movie franchises for part two of the quarantine podcast. Hope you have all enjoyed me just talking. It's not something everyone likes to enjoy. I know some people that don't like me talking, but it's okay. I don't like them either. So thank you for joining me for this part two, talking about the comedy specials, the franchises, the TV show that I want you to check out, Defending Jacob. Hope you got something out of it. Do check out Defending Jacob. I think it's a really, really good show. Check out any of these movies. Yep, pretty much all these franchises. Just don't watch Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, really. Just don't do that. And I'll talk to you. I'm probably going to record straight after this one anyway, part three, because I want to get these out. So in the next part of the quarantine podcast, I'll be talking about the books I read, which is, there's about nine books, and there's four music albums that I listen to as well. And I'll talk about some of the other music I listen to as well, not album related, but just like singles and songs, stuff like that. And also in part three of the quarantine podcast, I will be answering your questions that were left weeks ago, which again, apologies, but I'll be finally answering all those questions that were left, and I'll answer them right here. So thank you very much for listening to part two of the quarantine podcast. I'll see you, or you'll hear me, I guess, in part three. Have a great week. Stay safe. Wash your bloody hands. And look after yourself.